Good morning. How's everybody doing today? Good. My name is Sten. I'm the pastor here. If we have not had a chance to meet yet, I'd love to meet you after the service, if that is the case. But it's so good to have you here this morning. I love these Sunday mornings to have a chance here in this place to see old friends and to meet new ones who walk in the doors of this place for the very, very first time. In fact, there's a reoccurring theme that I'm noticing with people that I meet for the very first time, whether that's here or whether that's people that I meet in the community, whether that's on the basketball court or in coffee shops or out on the baseball field, as people find out that I'm a pastor and a part of a church, there's a reoccurring theme that I notice. One of the things that I noticed with people who I meet for the first time is that most of the time people, I'm serious, this happens so often, most of the time, one of the first things that people are quick to comment on, especially for people who have had past experience in a church before, one of the things people comment on most is the size of a church. This is especially true for people who have had past church experience, right? Church X or Church Y from their past was too big or too small, and mid-current church then, as a result, feels a little bit better because it is bigger, or most commonly because it is smaller than some church of their past. Different people have different preferences, different thoughts about how big or how small a church should be. The truth is, I've said this from day one. The truth is, I've told people the same thing, that I do not, when it comes to this church, mid-current church, I do not have a size goal. Right? That there's no goal in mind, that there's no number that I have said that we need to be this big or that we need to be that big. But what I have said from the very beginning, and I'll keep saying on and on and on into our future, what I have said from the very beginning is this, that as long as we have friends, as long as we have family members, as long as we have coworkers and classmates who do not know Jesus, then we're not big enough. I don't know what that is. I don't know what is big enough. I just know that as long as there are people that we know in our families, in our neighborhoods, in our conference rooms, in our classrooms that do not know Jesus, that have had not their lives connected or impacted by the good news of Jesus Christ, then we are not big enough, and we won't stop, and I won't stop. Because I really do believe that a healthy church is a growing church. Now, you got to be careful a little bit. Not every growing church is a healthy church necessarily, but I really do believe that a healthy church is a growing church. Now, if you've been a part of this church, especially from some of our days early on, just a year ago or a little less than that, if you've been a part of this church from the beginning, you will have noticed that we are growing. That the kids we check in alone to mid-current kids downstairs are literally like busting at the seams downstairs. That's probably one of my favorite problems to have. But both downstairs and both upstairs, in just about the year that we have been at this, we are growing, and that's a good thing. It's a really good thing. But here's the deal. Anytime that a church gets bigger, any church, this goes for. Anytime a church gets bigger, whether that's going from 50 to 100 or whether that's going from 100 to 200 or 200 to 500 or 500 to 1,000, whatever it is, anytime a church gets bigger, it also needs to work hard at getting smaller too. And so today what we're going to do, I'm really excited about this, we're going to be starting a brand new series called Growing Smaller. Growing smaller. As this church grows, we can't let you, and truthfully, you can't let you get lost in the shuffle. And so that's what we're going to be talking about a little bit here, how we grow smaller, right? Over the next few weeks, we're going to try to uncover some of the greatest ways for this church, for you and I to grow smaller, all while this church grows larger at the very same time. I think it's really important that we learn how to grow smaller, and some of the things that we'll uncover will not only help us do that, but I think will help us in some of the places in our lives that we're experiencing some difficulty or challenges right now. Real excited about the chance we have to talk about some of these ways, uncover some of the ways that we can grow smaller as a church, all while we are growing larger at the very same time. One of the primary ingredients, this is where I want to start off this morning, one of the primary ingredients to growing smaller happens to be also one of the primary ingredients to overcoming some of the biggest battles that you and I are facing in our lives today. Very same thing. Well, one of the very same ingredients that helps us to grow smaller is also one of the very same ingredients that helps us to overcome some of the battles that we are facing in our life right now. And let's face it, I think that we're all facing some kind of battle. Might be big, might be small, but I think we're all facing or all have faced some kind of battle, right? Some of these battles are good. Right? Some of these battles are things that we have chosen to fight for. Some of these things that God has asked us to fight for, and we've said yes, right? The goal is good. The mission is good. The things that we're shooting for are good, but the battle is still tough, right? Sometimes that's the case with the battles that we're fighting. Others of you are facing battles that you didn't ask for. It's not so great. You're fighting battles that you never wanted to fight. You're fighting battles that you never dreamed you'd be living through right now, whether that's living through the pain, living through the brokenness, living through the sadness, the hurt, the loneliness, the sadness. Never imagined that this would be what it is you're experiencing right now. And you never asked for it. You never wanted it to be the case. Whatever it might be, I think that every one of us is fighting some kind of battle today. And in a very literal sense, very literal, God's people in the days of the Old Testament, a people that we refer to collectively as the nation of Israel or the Israelites, okay? In a very literal sense, God's people in the days of the Old Testament, they were constantly fighting battles, real battles, actually. Swords and shields and horses and chariots and the whole nine yards. To make a very long story short, here's what happened. God used a man named Moses to deliver his people from slavery in Egypt down here, and he promised them a land of their own up here. Brought them out of slavery, promised them a land of their own up here. Anyone know the name of that land that God promised to his people? The Promised Land. Isn't that clever? Right? Such a catchy name for the land that God promised his people, the Promised Land. Okay, nonetheless, it was the place. It was the place that God had promised these people of his who hadn't had land of their own, but living in foreign land under someone else's control. Okay, this was the land that God promised to his people, that he set apart for his people, and that he prepared for his people. They just had to get there. The problem was, with each new zip code that they passed through, enemy troops were standing in their way. Foreign armies were blocking the way. Each time they knocked on the door of a new territory or a new region on their way to the Promised Land, local troops were there to greet them, and the welcome was never a warm one. And so if the Israelites wanted to claim this land that God had promised to them, if they wanted to keep on marching toward it, they had to fight for it. They had to fight for it. And one of the battles that they fought, and I want us to be clear here, one of the battles that they fought and ultimately won, okay, this spoiler alert here, I'm giving you the end of the story at the beginning here. One of the battles that they fought and ultimately won was against a nation of people known as the Amalekites. And their success in this moment, their success in this battle, it hinged on one momentum-swinging moment. Things were not looking good, but they ultimately claimed victory, and it all depended, it all hinged on one momentum-swinging moment, and this is the moment that I want us to drop in on this morning. This is the moment that I want us to pay close attention to, because what happened in this moment is exactly what needs to happen in our lives if, number one, we're going to overcome some of the battles that we're fighting in our life right now, and number two, if we're going to grow smaller all while this church grows larger. Very same thing needs to happen, and we see it happen here in this story. And so I want us to find out and see what it is that goes down. This story, it unfolds in the book of Exodus, right? The book of Exodus is the book in the Old Testament that details the story of God's people leaving Egypt and marching on to the land that he had promised them. So this story that I want us to see this morning, it unfolds in Exodus chapter 17, and we're going to pick up right now in verse 8. Here's what it says. While the people of Israel were still at Rephidim, the warriors of Amalek attacked them. Okay, battle's on. The war is raging. Here's verse 9. So Moses commanded Joshua, who was the leader of the troops. He says to Joshua, choose some men to go out and fight the army of Amalek for us. And tomorrow, he tells Joshua, tomorrow I will stand at the top of the hill holding the staff of God in my hand. He says, you go fight, I'll hold the staff of God in my hand. Okay, what's the deal with the staff of God? In case you're wondering, that staff of God, if you're curious, that staff was a pretty powerful little chunk of wood. Okay, time and time again, this staff was a physical symbol. It was a physical tool to demonstrate God's power. And time again, it was at the center of some pretty remarkable demonstrations of God's power. If you're familiar with the story of Moses, if you're familiar with the story of the Israelites leaving Egypt, you'll remember that this same staff is the staff that God turned into a snake right in front of Pharaoh. It's the same staff that Moses dipped into the Nile River in Egypt and turned it entirely into blood, all right before Pharaoh as a way to tell him, hey, God's serious, right? God ain't messing around. You better let us out of here. It's the very same staff. Okay, then in the verses, in the moments just before the ones that we're reading here this morning, the Israelites are on their journey in the desert to their promised land, and they're getting thirsty, and they're getting cranky because of it, and they're complaining to Moses. They're going, man, we don't have anything to drink. This is just in the moments before the moments we're reading here now. They said, we got nothing to drink. They said, we're thirsty, our livestock is thirsty, and you dragged us out here in the wilderness, and now we got nothing. They're complaining to Moses, and Moses is going, I don't know what to do. And so he turns to God. He says, God, what do I do? These people are all telling me they're thirsty, and they're, you know, their animals got nothing, and they got nothing. And God says to Moses, he says, okay, take that staff, go strike it on the rock, and water will flow from it. And that's exactly what Moses does. And that's exactly what happens. He takes that staff and he strikes the rock and water flows from it and everybody's got what they need. Like I said, this is one impressive little hunk of wood. There's some real power in that staff. And so Moses tells Joshua, he says, you go fight, you go do your thing. And he says, I'll do my thing. I'll stand at the top of the hill with that staff. I'll stand at the top of the hill with that staff in my hand, looking out over the battlefield. I'll stand at the top of the hill with that staff in my hand and my arms held high. With the track record of that little hunk of wood, I'm thinking, you got to think, they're thinking that the odds are in their favor. So let's jump back in then to verse 10. It says this, so Joshua did what Moses commanded, and he fought the army of Amalek. Meanwhile, Moses did what he said he'd do. Meanwhile, Moses, Aaron, and Hur climbed to the top of a hill nearby. And as long as Moses held the staff in his hand, the Israelites had the advantage. But whenever he dropped his hand, the Amalekites gained the advantage. Okay? Arms up, Israel's winning. Arms come down, Israel's losing. It seems to me, and you got to excuse the pun here, it seems to me that as long as they have that staff, they had the upper hand. They had the advantage. They had the secret weapon. Moses just needed to keep his arms up, and victory was theirs. Right? Seems like they're in a good position. The only problem is this battle goes long. The battle keeps going on. And that only means one thing for Moses. Look at verse 12. It says, Moses' arms soon became so tired that he could no longer hold them up. They got the upper hand. He just needs to keep his arms up, but his arms are getting tired. I was doing this at home all week, kind of figuring out what it would be like to hold your hands up. I got like 10 or 15 seconds before my shoulders started burning. Moses, he's got the secret weapon. He's got his arms held high, but the battle is going long. And it says his arms soon became tired because he could no longer hold them up. They're fighting an important battle. They're fighting an incredibly important battle. Moses is holding the key to it all, but he can't keep his arms up any longer. He's getting tired. Now let me just step out of this story then for a second and ask you this. Are any of you getting tired right now in the battle that you're fighting? Any of you fighting a battle that you feel like has been going on a lot longer than you thought it would? whether it's the battles we've chosen to fight, whether it's the battles that we said yes to, that God asked us to fight, or whether it's the battles that we didn't ask for, the battles that came out of left field, the battles that are just throwing us one curveball after another. I think most of us, and this is just me taking a wild guess here, I think most of us have or are right now fighting some kind of battle. And more often than not, I think these battles we're fighting are hard, and we're getting tired because they're going on and on and on. And I would say that some of us, I know what this feels like for me, I would say that some of us know what it's like to feel like our arms are getting tired and that our arms are close to dropping down in defeat. Any of you know that feeling? Maybe for you, you're getting tired just in parenting. Maybe very physically. You got newborns or infants, and you're actually just not sleeping, so you're incredibly tired. Or maybe you're going through a phase right now, a tough phase, and you're just not sure if you make it to the other side. You're not sure if you can see the light at the end of the tunnel, right? Maybe it's the you know, toddler years or the teenage years, you know, so help us God, right? I don't know what it is. If the terrible twos feel like they're never going to end, or if the teenage years are just something that we never imagined would go the way they are. Maybe you're there right now in your life as a parent, a mom, a dad, a grandma or a grandpa, an aunt, an uncle who's watching over little ones. Maybe you're there right now and you're tired. Maybe you're getting tired in marriage. Right? Things aren't quite like they were before. They aren't quite like they were long ago. Things aren't just clicking like they used to. You're hanging in there. Maybe you both are. You're kind of holding on. You're trying to fight for what matters most, but you're tired. And you don't know how long you can keep going on like this. Maybe you're getting tired at work or in your career or in your profession. Maybe you just feel like the job has changed, or the leadership has changed, the office dynamics have changed, the camaraderie has changed. I don't know, maybe it's the culture that's changed or the values that changed. And I don't know exactly what it would be. I just know that sometimes the thing that we spend so much of our time doing starts to become something where we say, you know, I don't know if I can keep doing this any longer. I'm not saying we can't keep supporting our family or doing what we got to do, but I just know sometimes the things that we put our hands to in the workplace start to become things that we feel like, you know, I don't know if I can keep doing this any longer. I don't know if this is working out for me any longer. I don't know if this situation is right for me any longer. Maybe you're getting tired in your place of leadership right now. Maybe you own the company. Maybe you manage the team. Maybe you lead the branch, maybe you set the pace, you carry the weight of all the expectations, you get all the questions, you field all the complaints, you get all the criticisms, you fix all the problems, and you've gotten to a point where you're going, you know what, I'm tired. I don't know if this is what I signed up for when I stepped into this. Maybe you're sick, maybe you have been for a while. Maybe you're fighting to stay healthy, fighting to stay on your feet, fighting to stay positive and keep at it. Maybe someone you know is sick and caring for them has been exhausting for you emotionally, physically, maybe. Maybe you just lost another job. Maybe you just got another demotion or another rejection letter, or maybe you just experienced another breakup or another breakdown or yet another moment of just what feels like just plain old bad luck. I don't exactly know what it is for you. I don't know exactly what it might be for everyone sitting here today, but I know that all of us, myself absolutely included, I know all of us have experienced moments like these, where just like Moses, right, the victory is on the line, but the battle is going long, and we're getting tired. We're not sure if we can keep our arms up any longer. Moses is getting tired. If we step back into this story, we see that Moses is getting tired. He can't keep that staff. He can't keep that secret weapon up any longer because his arms are getting tired. He can't hold his arms up any longer. And that's not good news for the troops down in the trenches. They are fighting for survival. They're fighting for their lives. They're fighting for their people. They're fighting for their nation. They're fighting for their land. to take one step closer to this land that God has promised them. So the fact that Moses can't keep his arms up is not good news for them. And yet, if you remember what I said about this battle with the Amalekites, I said at the very beginning, if you remember what I said that it's a battle that they fought, and it's a battle that they ultimately won. They won. They came out on the right side of this deal. And so what happened? What changed? What made the difference in this moment where Moses is not sure that he can keep going on? What changed? What made the difference? That's exactly what I want us to see here this morning. Because what made the difference for Moses then and there, it very well may be the same thing that makes the difference for you and for I here and now. We're going to look at how this plays out here, and I'm going to backtrack just a bit so we can get a rolling start into what I want us to see. So we're going to go back to verse 11. Remember, here's what it says. It says, as long as Moses held up the staff in his hand, the Israelites had the advantage, but whenever he dropped his hand, the Amalekites gained the advantage. Verse 12 says that Moses soon became tired, so he could no longer hold them up. So what happened then? It says this, so Aaron and Hur stepped into the picture. Aaron and Hur found a stone for him to sit on. They're saying, hey, Moses, sit down, rest your legs, keep your arms up. We need you, man. Sit down, keep your arms high. Pull up a stone for him, but that's not it. It says this, then they stood on each side of Moses, holding up his hands. So sit down, rest your legs, keep your arms high. But then they took it a step further and they stood on each side, holding up his hands, saying, no, hey, your arms are getting tired, we'll hold them up. We're here for you. And it says this, so his hands held steady because of Aaron, because of Hur, his hands held steady until sunset. And as a result, Joshua overwhelmed the army of Amalek in battle. You catch this? Moses, he didn't finish off this battle on his own. Victory was his. Victory was theirs only after Aaron and Hur stepped into the picture to help Moses do what he could not do on his own. Moses won only after Aaron and Hur stood on his left and stood on his right and held up his arms when he couldn't hold up his arms any longer. What a beautiful picture. What a beautiful picture of what it means to be there for one another. Can't keep your arms up? I'll hold them up for you. What a beautiful picture it is to be there, to be surrounding each other. And what this tells me is this, that yes, God has prepared to do some powerful things in our lives. I really believe that God is prepared to do some powerful things in your lives. I really believe that God is prepared to help you overcome some of the biggest battles that you are facing in your life right now. But what this tells me is this, that sometimes the only difference between victory and defeat is four extra hands to carry the load. Four extra hands to hold up your arms when the battle goes long. So let me just ask you this then. When you grow tired, when the battle goes long, who's holding up your arms? Who's holding your hands steady? I'm not asking how many friends you have on Facebook. I'm not asking you how many people know your name or recognize you around town. I'm not asking you how well known you are. I'm asking you who's standing close enough so that when your arms drop down, they say, no, not while I'm here. Not as long as I'm standing by. Who's keeping your head in the game? Who's carrying the load with you when that battle goes long? Who's praying for you? Who knows what to be praying for you about? Who's praying for your marriage? Who's praying for your kids? Who's praying for the test results? Who's praying for the big decision that you gotta be making soon? Right? Who's checking in on you? Who's taking your kids for a few hours when you just need a moment to step away and get your head on straight? Who's speaking truth to you? Who's encouraging you? Who's building you up and lifting you up and holding you up? When you can't hold yourself up any longer. The battles that we're up against right now, and they're different for all of us, I get that. I don't know what it is for you, but the battles that we are up against right now might be ones that we do not win on our own. And so the question is, who's there to help? The question is, do you allow people access to your life? Do you allow people close enough to you so that they could pull up a chair for you? I mean, a stone is fine. I'd prefer a chair, right? Are there people close enough to you to pull up a chair? Are there people close enough to you to steady your hands in the moments that you need it most? Do you have people in your life that are standing by your side, surrounding you when that battle goes on and on and on? I don't know if you do. I don't know if you don't. I don't know if you're wondering, man, where do those kind of people come from? Where do those kind of friends come from? I hope that they would come from here. Maybe you've got those friends elsewhere. That's great too. But if you don't, or if you don't have them in this place, I hope they would come from here. We want everyone at Midcurrent Church to have an errand. To have a her. We want everyone to be holding someone's arms high. Why? Because we're better together. And I think that we absolutely need each other for some of the things that we're experiencing, for some of the things that we're walking through or moving through in life right now. And I think that if we're going to find people to hold our arms up high, if we're going to find people to keep our hands steady until sunset, if we're going to become more than just a number here, more than just a butt in one of the seats while this church grows, then I think we have to let people into our lives. We have to let people in on what's happening and what's going on with us. And that starts when we make a decision to move from rows into circles. When we make a decision to move out of rows, staring at the back of someone's head, and into circles, staring at someone face to face and eye to eye. We have to start to develop relationships that go beyond the 15 minutes after church when we, just grab another cup of coffee and wrap things up here. We have to build relationships with people who really know us, who know our lives, who know our families, who know our hearts, and who know our hopes and our dreams, who know our fears, and who know our insecurities. Got to have people in our lives who we can talk to about more than just the weather or more than just football scores. And starting next Sunday, here's where all this is going for us. Starting next Sunday and then for the next 8 weeks, that's what we want to have happen here. To have more and more of you move from rows into circles. That's what we want to have happen here. In fact, we've got a number of folks here from this church, from Midcurrent, who have agreed to open up their homes to you. I've agreed to host smaller groups of you this fall to do just two very simple things, to build relationships and then to have conversation about the things that we discuss here on a Sunday. That's what these groups for the next 8 weeks are designed for. And we want you to find one. We want you to find one that's right for you and to become a part of one this fall. You very well may have, I don't know, you very well may have been a part of something like this, been a part of things like this in the past, and you have ideas about what it is or isn't, or you have ideas about what it should or shouldn't be. But here's the simple goal for us right here, right now. The simple goal for these next 8 weeks is this, that we just want you to be more than a number here. We want you to have more and more God-centered relationships in your life. We want you to have people in your life who can hold up your arms when you get tired. And we want you to be someone that's holding someone else's arms up when they get tired. Maybe you're sitting here today and you're going, you know what, Sten? I don't really know if I'm, right now, I don't really know if I'm experiencing any kind of battle like it is that you're talking about right now. That's fine. But the question is, would you hold up someone else's arms who is? Would you come alongside someone else? Would you stand on their left or would you stand on their right, keeping their hands steady until sunset? We're not asking you to come together every week to do like a in-depth Greek word Bible study on the New Testament. We're not asking you to read a book even or do some kind of homework assignment every week. You don't have to be a Bible scholar. We're just asking you, especially if you're feeling lost in the shuffle, especially if you're feeling like, you know what, I need some people in my life to hold my arms up high. We're just asking you to show up. As this church grows larger, we're counting on you, we're asking you, we're hoping that you would help us to make it smaller for each other, to be present in the lives of other people, to get to know one another and to hold each other's arms up high. That's the goal right now because we believe that we're better together. I believe that we very well may just be four hands short of some of the greatest comebacks or some of the greatest triumphs that we're about to experience in life. I believe that some of us are on the edge of those comebacks, on the edge of those victories, but we might just be four hands short. And so we need to know then who's standing by our side. That's what these groups are designed for. As a matter of just kind of logistics here, you can find them online at MidCurrent. It's a little website that we use for those of us here to kind of get into the back door and see where things are coming alive. It's a website. It's midcurrent.churchcenter.com. You'll see every group that we have available for you. midcurrent.churchcenter.com. After the service, the hosts of these groups are actually going to be available in the back for you to connect with, for you to get to know, along with me and my wife, Erica. It's Luann Berg, it's Rita and Randy Lindstedt, it's Brian and Sarah Smith, and it's Tina and Preston Pettis, and these folks are honestly some of MidCurrent's finest who have agreed to open up their homes for you, and if we need to find more or create more, we'll do that, I promise you. If we need more than just these five, we'll find more than just these five. Because here's the deal. We simply want you to have the chance to find friends who will stand by your side and keep your arms steady in the moments that you need it most. It all starts here, and it all starts now. And then as I just wrap this up, let me be clear, be honest about something, about these opportunities to step into smaller groups, to step into to circles out of these rows. Let me be clear about something. The next 8 weeks, right, starting next Sunday, they'll just exist for 8 weeks. Just a chance for you, an on-ramp for you to step into this, right? Here's, I want to be clear about something. The next 8 weeks, they might not produce your new BFF. They might not. I don't know. They might not produce your new best friends. They might not produce. You take a chance to step out of rows and into circles for this fall. It may not produce for you the people that are going to be standing by your side for the long haul. I cannot promise you that. But I can promise you one thing. If you don't start somewhere, if you don't start that movement, if you don't start that movement from rows into circles, you won't ever find them. You won't ever find them, right? A small group for the next 8 weeks is not permanent. It doesn't have to last any longer than these 8 weeks, but it is a first step out of rows. It is a first step into circles, and it might be a first step that leads to another step, and it might be a step that leads to another step after that. It could lead to a first step that ultimately leads to strength and to support and to friends that you never knew you had. It might be a step that leads to another step that leads to strength and support and friends that you never knew existed. And so my plea to you is this, my invitation to you is this. Three things. Sign up, circle up, and hold each other's arms up. It could make all the difference in the world for some of you sitting here today. Let me pray for us. God, we are grateful for this place and for all the people that fill this room and fill these seats every Sunday, God. And God, I know that I've experienced some long seasons in my own life where it maybe feels lonely, or you know, the battle that's waging on is just too much. And so, God, for anybody who's experiencing that right now, God, for anyone who's feeling lost in the shuffle in this church or in this community or in life, God, I pray that this would be a place that helps this big world get a whole lot smaller. And so, God, I thank you for the way that your word has a way to teach us some incredible lessons, God. So I thank you for the chance to see here today, God, the most beautiful picture of what it looks like to stand alongside of one another, God. And I'm just praying big time, God, that you would do one of two things, God. I'm praying that you would send some people into our lives who would hold our arms up, God, or that I pray that you would send us people who need us to hold up their arms. God, I thank you for this picture, for what it is that we learn about what can happen when we stand next to one another, when we support one another, when we lift each other up, God. And I'm praying for victory. I'm praying for triumph. I'm praying for comebacks. I'm praying for support and for encouragement and for friendships in our lives, God, that we never knew existed, but that we would find them here and that we would find them now. God, so would you lead the way? God, would you be the one to draw us to one another, draw us to the people that we need the most, God, and would you begin to prepare in us some of the greatest victories that we need to experience? God, we're grateful for this morning. We're grateful for this chance to be together, and we pray all these things in the name of your son, Jesus. Amen.